Welcome to Bridge the Gap with host Josh and Lucas, a podcast dedicated to informing, educating, and influencing the future of housing and services for seniors. Powered by our supporting partners, NHI, TSO Life, NRC Health, Erdman, Sherpa, TIS, and RCARE. Find out more about this podcast at btgvoice.com.
Welcome to Bridge the Gap podcast with Josh and Lucas. We are at the Argentum Conference 2019 here in San Antonio, Texas, and we have one what I believe to be the best kept secret in senior living nationwide. Maybe not in San Antonio, he's not a secret, but we have James Lee. He's the ED of Brookdale San Antonio. James, welcome to the program.
Thanks. I am super, super stoked to be here. I appreciate, you know, the platform to talk about our communities and our caregivers. This is really cool. It's very exciting.
Yeah, we're grateful to have you on the show. Thanks for being here. We know you have a very, very busy schedule working in the business, in the communities. So thanks for taking time away for us.
Happy to be here.
And that's really a big part of this, Josh. You as an operator in the business, I'm looking forward to hearing this dialogue because a lot of the people that are doing the heavy lifting, the hard work that we talk about, that are creating and cultivating these love stories that we like to highlight, they are not able to come to these conferences a lot of times because they have to work.
Yeah, well, that was part of the genesis and the idea behind our podcast, right? We were like, how do we take this incredible thought leadership, this networking opportunity that we are so blessed to be able to attend and deliver that out to others. So a unique perspective today through the lens of James. So thank you for being on the show. Let's dive into the conversation.
Let's do that. James, I'm an avid follower of your LinkedIn content, which has really been the impetus of you and I getting connected. You've really been a trailblazer in the business, working for some of the larger companies and a variety of positions. And what I find your origin story to be very unique. Let's unpack that a little bit so that our audience can get some context of how you've gotten to here.
Sure, yeah. You know, I think my story in a senior living mirrors a lot of people's kind of similar cadence of their story. Everyone has a unique entry, but similar, you know. And so for mine, and that similar thread is that you didn't mean to find it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like falling in love. It happened, right?
Right.
So I've been in senior living for, this is my 11th year. I found it at a time that I was really at a crossroads of what do I do with my, you know, education? You know, who do I want to be when mm-hmm. I grow up? And so at the time I was applying to law school. I was living in Austin. I was applying to law school and I thought, well, I need to get a job, but it can't be a serious profession that I have to put on my resume and then have to explain why did I only do that for, you know, 6 months. So I went on not even LinkedIn or any of that. It was Craigslist, of all places. I went to Craigslist to start looking for jobs, and this address popped up. I didn't even see the title. I just saw the address, and I thought, well, this place is across the street from where I live. So I was in real expense-crunching, saving mode at the time, so I thought I can walk to work. So it turned out that the place was an independent living, assisted living community. I mean, I really had to look, what is independent living? and so I took a position as a front desk concierge. Mm-hmm. And then a few weeks after, the health and wellness director asked me, hey, we need to fill a couple of shifts. And would you like to do that? And I thought, okay, that sounds great. Probably a week or two after that, I mean, it is the same feeling of falling in love of like, what was that, you know? Mm-hmm. And I really looked forward to the weekends to be going to work and talk to not just the residents, but the people who are in that same love story, mm-hmm. you know, with you. And so a moment of decision came of, do I continue to pursue, you know, law school or whatever, you know, educational pursuit I was thinking of, or do I go full throttle into this thing, which at the time was paying me $10 an hour? You know, and so I had to convince my dad and all these people, you know, who were invested in the other career path that, you know, senior living felt right. Mm-hmm. And it was the first conscious decision I made in my life to pursue something that felt right and didn't just sound right, mm-hmm. you know, from a career perspective. And 11 years later, you know, I get to do stuff that's just, I never have a bad day. I have tough days. You know, but I never have a bad day at work.
Yeah.
And that's pretty amazing.
That's fascinating. So we talk a lot about love stories. Yeah. So I appreciate the fact that you kind of painted that picture in your story. I think that's a great kind of segue to talk about something that I've overheard a little bit, and that Lucas has had an opportunity to spend more time with you here in Texas. But, you know, oftentimes we talk about this work-life balance, and you don't really approach it like that. So tell us kind of how you rephrase that. And,
sure.
And it seems like something you live by.
Yeah, I've tried, and I think, you know, career and life should evolve at the same time. And I firmly believed in work-life balance up until I started in senior living. And I thought, you spend your time at work, you spend your time in your personal life, and, you know, hope that they're a good enough match. But what I've really learned and subscribed to is this kind of feeling of work-life harmony, you know, mm-hmm. and not even work-life harmony, but just life harmony, mm-hmm. that all of the things that you do in your life, whether it's work or friendships, volunteering, the type of pets you have, that if those things are in harmony, you're never, you know, needing to negotiate time between passions. Mm-hmm. You're living your life. And so work happens to be a component of that harmony. But, you know, every day I get to go to work, and if I feel purpose in the connections between, you know, the managers and care associates and residents, that's harmony.
Yeah.
Right. So I don't count how long I'm at work. There probably are weeks that I'm there, you know, 30 hours, mm-hmm. and then there are others that I'm, you know, there longer. But in the end, it all averages out to whatever it needs to be, because you found harmony in your pursuits.
Yeah, I love that. And I would say I experienced that. I don't know about you, Lucas. I would assume so, because you're so jazzed up every day about doing what you do. I mean, you're one of the most exciting people to be around, and I thrive on your energy. But, you know, that's something, even though, you know, James, firsthand, the work we do in the communities is so important. And it's oftentimes, you know, kind of a thankless job, because you're doing things that aren't necessarily glamorous, but when it is your passion and your purpose, you almost get energy from doing it. So I can sympathize with that. Similarly, as I've shared with Lucas, when I started in senior living, like you, I didn't really know what it was, and it was not what sounded right, as you mentioned that, but it was right in that I wanted to help people, and I had a passion for that. Didn't know how to apply it to senior living. So I'm so fascinated, and thank you for sharing your story. So in senior living, we have to build a lot of teams. So like everything's around a team. You do so much and building the right team. So talk with us a little bit about your perspective on where our industry is, on team building, where we've come from, maybe where you feel like we need to be going, and what we need to be doing.
Sure. You know, as a insider, you know, I think we can talk about things and not disparage them, but, you know, talk about the reality of the things that we're doing well and that we're not. You know, Josh, you mentioned that it can feel like a thankless job, mm-hmm. and the first in line to be giving that thanks should be the leaders, mm-hmm. you know, within the industry. And I think when you think about the kind of quintessential example of who might feel thankless, mm-hmm. I go right to caregiver. Mm-hmm. You know, I go to the people that aren't earning the wages where it feels like, you know, I can relax and enjoy this. Mm-hmm. They're thinking about, you know, I have caregivers at our community that take 2 or 3 buses to get to work.
Wow.
That it's a 2-hour commute on a good day to get to work, right? So if they miss a shift, you know, our natural thought is, if somebody calls off on a shift, well, you know, they're not showing you know, dedication or whatever. But then you think about, well, it takes them 2 hours to get there and back, mm-hmm. right? And for them, if they miss a shift, it means a great deal to them. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, as passionate as we are about resident care and family, when we say customer, we really mean the person who's paying us, right? But we got to think about the people that we're paying.
Sure.
We have to be as obsessive about meeting the needs of our workers, mm-hmm. our managers, our caregivers, everyone at the community. And if we're doing that, everything else falls into place.
I totally agree with you. And I think oftentimes in our industry, I hear people say it all the time, our residents are number one, you know, our families are number one. And you know they're going in that with the right intentions.
Sure.
But oftentimes what you see is you see such an intentional focus, and you see intentional incentives put in place for making that resident or that family happy, but so infrequent do we actually build our reward systems, structures, and intentionality and plans around, well, how do we invest in making this team member the best possible team member? How do we invest in making this the best experience for them? And out of that abundance, when they're well taken care of, how much easier is it to reach that resident and that family member, that consumer, as you say? What's been your experience in some successful strategies that you've implemented?
Yeah. You know, at the heart of all of our kind of leadership strategies at the community is a real belief in we got to give them something other than their wages, mm-hmm. right? Wages, and we all talk about, should we raise wages? Should everybody go up to X dollars an hour? But the problem with that is that it doesn't actually solve the problem of thanklessness, sure. You know? And so what if you could make $15 an hour, $18 an hour here? If everybody's paying that, you're just still bouncing from one place mm-hmm. to another. So our commitment is, how do we help our associates to gain the additional that will help them beyond this role, beyond mm-hmm. beyond their pay? So the way that we deliver that is education.
Okay.
We spend a lot of time on workshops. Mm-hmm. I start with the managers. Mm-hmm. I know that I can't impact the entire team to the same degree. So I focus on my group of managers that are direct reports. And I think about, how am I adding skill sets to their plate? Mm-hmm. How am I padding their resume for the next job? And when I arrived, not a single one of our managers had ever seen a financial statement before.
Wow.
I mean, not a one of them. And it wasn't because they weren't interested or had the capacity to understand it. Nobody just opened it up and said, here's our business. Mm-hmm. You know, when we ask our managers to be business leaders and drive our business, but they don't have just the basic language around it, you know, we're asking people to participate in something without giving them the respect of, here's the knowledge.
Yeah.
Right? So from our caregivers through our leadership levels there, we're really focused on building skill sets that are transferable beyond whatever you're doing here for us.
Okay. Yeah. So I've heard you and Lucas talk a little bit about how your approach is more of like a career, what term did you use? Career consultant or something
that?
Yeah, in your approach to that. So it seems like that ties in really well with what we're talking about here.
You know, and maybe this is an odd perspective, but when we talk about the turnover problem in our industry, everybody makes the same inherent assumptions about it, that turnover is bad, here's the right range that you should be at. And then all you end up doing is trying to fix it to get to a level, mm-hmm. right? Without understanding the things that drive it. So our turn, well, I will give you numbers. Ironically, mm-hmm. I'm going to set it up that way, but give you numbers. When I arrived, turnover rate, I think at the end of that year, I was about mid-year, was somewhere about 125%.
Wow.
Pretty astounding.
Yeah.
And then within a year's time, we were able to cut that down by almost half, about 62%. But the way that we did that was thinking about, let's not solve a numerical problem of turnover. Let's try to enhance the way people are turning over.
Okay.
Right. So we are actively trying to work to position us as an employer that's going to help you grow your skill sets. Mm-hmm. Right. So if we have a caregiver who is engaged and productive for a year versus somebody who's disengaged for 3 months, right? Or disengage for 5 years. Let's say mm-hmm. that we retain somebody for 5 years, but they're not really engaged at work. Would you know, in your communities, would you take the caregiver for a year who is fully engaged, who participates in mentorship and bringing the next people up? Mm-hmm. Would you trade them out for the 5-year employee who's there, but not giving you their heart?
Not engaged.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
So retention and all of that is not a numbers game. It is about, can we make it productive for us? So you know what? If we never drop below 50% retention or turnover, but every single person who comes through is giving us their all, whatever their time frame is, mm-hmm. I'll take that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, interesting discussion, and I think it kind of parallels what you're talking about with, you have a very unique perspective, and I had never really thought about, you know, would you trade, when you asked me that question, the highly engaged one-year worker that's preparing for the next thing. I'm assuming if you do that successfully, they also become sort of an ambassador for you.
100%.
Like, so they're out there recruiting for you. But, you know, we often hear, you guys hear it at all the conferences that we go to, all the articles that you read, everybody's talking about labor challenges, wage challenges, you know, how do you recruit, how do you retain? And it seems like to me there's like a missing conversation or a couple of missing conversations, one of which is what you just brought to our attention. But, you know, I was telling somebody the other day, James, you may have, Lucas, you may have some insight on this. We recently, with our day job, our company, we actually took over an existing community, a very old community in a metro area in the Southeast. I was fascinated that this community, it's nothing pretty to look at. It's the place that everybody would drive by and think, you know, that's not really flashy. That's maybe not where I want to work. I was astounded that they have almost no turnover, employee turnover, and haven't had for years. It's a small owner-operator place. The wages, you go in and I look at them and I'm like, they're a little bit probably under the market. They offer no insurance benefits, no retirement benefits. So in other words, from the outside looking in, I'm thinking, oh my goodness, how do they keep these workers? One by one by one, I meet with them, I talk with them. They're happy. They love what they do. And then it causes me to go back to all these panels that I've participated in, having these conversations like right now with you guys, and think, what is it that is there that causes these people to buy in so much to what they're doing that is the reason why they're retaining? And it has nothing to do with the wage, with the benefits, you know, so what is that? So I don't have the answer for that yet, but I think you're touching on it, and there's something there that I think we should be talking about in our industry.
Yeah, I think, you know, in the pursuit of doing the right thing for our associate, all of our business metrics are going to rise, you know, to that. And the same approach I have with our, what we call, you know, the front staff, you know, I take that to the managers also, and I think, am I developing their skill sets in a way that makes sense, and are they involved in that discussion? Mm-hmm. You know, I think one of the best lessons I had in leadership was this moment I had prepared all of this insight into what she was doing well, what she wasn't doing well. This was earlier on in my senior living career. And I remember having a conversation with her, and at the end of it, I had, you know, expanded upon these great insights. And, you know, she looked at me and said, I appreciate all of this, but, you know, I don't want that job you're talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, she said, I just really want to love this job. Mm-hmm. And it was this light bulb moment of like, I have not served this associate in this conversation, mm-hmm. or in the way that I schedule her day or let her schedule her day. But it was a real wake up call to say that, you know, leadership has nothing to do with how well prepared you are. It's how well did you listen to them in the first place?
Yeah.
Right.
Awesome. So let's make a quick shift here and kind of round out the conversation a little bit. Talk to us a little bit about how you think our culture views senior living for the good or for the bad, and how that translates to how our industry views senior living.
Josh, that's the big question. That's, you know, so yeah, you know, part of my outlook onto this is that everybody here, everybody behind us, we're all after good. We're all after doing a good thing. But I think fundamentally the question that we ask is, what do seniors need? Mm-hmm. And then let's all work together to find it, package it, and get it in front of them. Mm-hmm. But the real question we should be asking is, what do we need of our seniors? Mm-hmm. You know, because what underlies that question is an inherent belief that the seniors are providing value, right? And so, you know, when you think of seniors as the end recipient of a transaction, mm-hmm. you know, they're customers, and we have to create some beautiful things and sell it to our customers. Mm-hmm. But when we ask, what do we need of our seniors, mm-hmm. then we're creating services and solutions for them that they care about, mm-hmm. right? I have a resident at our community that is looking for a job. Mm-hmm. You know, he's 84 years old.
Wow.
And, you know, we're working through some stuff, some things that were going on in his life. And we came to this kind of decision, or he did rather, and I just asked, I think, the right questions. He said, you know, maybe I might like to work. Mm-hmm. And he had a pretty great career. I mean, his resume would dwarf the three of ours combined, I bet. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he didn't have a clue about how to get started mm-hmm. on that. And I realized, okay, well, what if the answer to what do we need from our seniors is we need them to continue to be productive, you know, in society in a working capacity. And look, here's somebody who wants that as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, instead of planning a calendar of activities that we think they might enjoy, what if we cared enough to ask those questions and say, what do you want? And let us enable that.
Yeah.
And so hopefully, we'll find a job, you know, for him.
Yeah.
If you guys are hiring, let me know. I'll send his resume over. But that's, you know, I think if you ask that question, our cultural belief of aging is that, well, in my opinion, I think it's despite our best efforts to dress it up with nice words, you know, it's just kind of this idea that they can't do for themselves, so we have to step in and do that.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. We talk about this a lot. I think that we put some of our most valuable resources mm-hmm. and assets on the sideline once they get to our communities. And oftentimes it's not just a job that they need, but it's a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So for their whole life, they've been living for a purpose and engaged. And then somehow when they come to the community, we just start telling them, you know, here's what you need to be doing, rather than asking the questions. I love that fresh perspective. You know, without getting overtly spiritual, Lucas, on our show, I've told my teams for years, and I think it takes home what James is saying, in that it's, you know, as humans, we all are given a God-given purpose, right? Regardless of our age, regardless of our frailty, if we're breathing, if we're living, we still have a purpose.
Yeah.
And so engaging residents in that purpose, and I firmly believe that, you know, a lot of times they've lived their whole lives, had good experiences, bad experiences, and are this wealth of information, and they've been prepared through all that for the time that they are now in this part of their life that they just happen to be living in our community.
Yeah.
And how do we engage them in that? So I love that fresh perspective.
Yeah. It's a great and beautiful discussion. I've so enjoyed just, you know, the wheels are spinning here.
Yeah.
And I highly encourage our listeners, if you're not following James Lee on LinkedIn, you
missing
need to
out.
Be.
Missing out.
You're missing out, because if you've enjoyed this conversation, he posts regularly his thoughts and ideas and feelings about his area of expertise and his work, his day-to-day life, the things that he's encountering, his thoughts and views and perspectives. So if you've enjoyed that, please connect with him. We'll make sure that we connect with James in the show notes as well. And then we would love to get some feedback. You know, we've had a lot of diverse guests on the show, and we're going to be having some more community level type people in the future. And, you know, we'd love to hear from our listeners. How is this resonating with you? What ideas do you have? Is this in line with what you're seeing? Connect to us on our show through our show notes. You can go to btgvoice.com. Connect to us on our social media from there. And thank you once again for listening to another great episode of Bridge the Gap.
Awesome.
The podcast team wants to hear from you. If you're on Instagram, let us know your takeaways. Take a screenshot of the show you just listened to, tag BTG Voice, and we might just share your thoughts. Thanks for listening to Bridge the Gap.